Hey everyone, this is Lael, and welcome to a new season of Unscripted Woman. I'm calling this season On Her Mind. And if you don't know what the season is about, I'd invite you to check out the intro that I made to give you a bit of context, but I'm so glad you're here. I am so incredibly excited to have you overhear this conversation I had with the amazing Jen Dean back in early June. It's a rollicking ride of a conversation, and try as I might, heads up on the audio levels because there is much laughter, much swearing, and then much quiet conversation. So the range, literally and figuratively, of this conversation is far and deep and high and wide. And it was just fucking awesome. I hope you'll agree. I know Jen, as you'll see in the intro. Jen is by trade a photographer. She is responsible. She's the one who did all of the images that you see now on my website, my most recent revision of my website. And it was through Jen's lens that I saw myself at the age. So when I did it, I was, I think, 52. I had just turned 52. And it was after COVID, and I had like hair down way past my shoulders, because if you'll remember, we didn't do hair back in COVID. And so I hadn't cut my hair for like 18 months, and I didn't know how to do long hair. I certainly didn't, under ordinary circumstances, don't do makeup or anything like that. And so I remember going into the photography session, the photo session with her, sort of nervous, because I'm used to being behind the lens as someone who has some experience in photography and design. And so I'm always uncomfortable. People don't know this about me, but I'm always uncomfortable in front of the lens because I want to direct and frame at the same time I'm the subject. So I'm sure I'm a ball to work with. But I remember the magic. Jen will reference that there's magic in her work. I reference that there's magic in my work. So we're sort of kindred spirits in that idea from different disciplines. And I experienced that magic firsthand with Jen in that photo session, so much so that when I got the images back, I fell in love with myself. And I don't say that lightly for fear of sounding arrogant. It's not that I was like gobsmacked by beauty, but how I look is never something I've identified with. It's always my charm or my humor or my zest and my zeal and my high energy. But I looked at myself through Jen's lens, and I was like, I would be friends with this woman. Look at her. And I am forever, ever grateful. And she does that work with so many people. So it was a no-brainer when I started doing this series of inviting people in to hear what's on your mind. Jen and I have intersected a number of times over the years. Our lives are sort of intertwined in the world of women, particularly in Maine. People are like, do you know Jen Dean? And she was like, people would say to her, do you know Lael Jepsen? Because you guys should. And we finally intersected. And we've not stopped intersecting since on so many reasons, as you'll hear in our conversation. But this conversation, I want to hear the thought bubbles that are above Jen's head. So and you'll hear, it's such a divergent, awesome conversation, because we talk about power and intuition and how you know it's here, how you lean into it, how you trust it, how we're trained not to trust it. We talk about time and how to bend it and astral dreams. We talk about shit that lots of people never talk about. So I'm so excited to sort of let you in to this conversation as if you're overhearing it in a restaurant, in a train station, or on a subway. That's the whole premise. So somewhere in all that, Jen and I weave her three themes, which you'll see they morph over our conversation. And I will often joke, do you mind if I play with your strands, your three threads? So just to reiterate, all of these series, I ask people to say, what are the three things that are in your brain that your brain is weaving and your heart is weaving and your spirit is weaving? And Jen jokes right off the bat, like, don't ask me to choose three things. That's like cruel. So, but somewhere in there, her three themes become about seeing ourselves and others, the freedom that comes, how to liberate ourselves from convention, from tradition, from, she talks about this concept of unschooling, which she got in this book that she references that I love. And then all of this is around accessing our collective wisdom. We talk about how it's sort of like the vagus nerve of our humanity. How do we tap into, how do we access, how to for power? How does that look? And how scary that is. And we both give very, very specific examples of how that looks in our lives. So when I was editing this and I was going through it, I was like, wow, I can't believe I said that out loud. I don't think I ever have. And I know it's true for Jen as well. So just know that this is a vulnerable conversation for us. None of this is rehearsed. We didn't know what we were going to say. But it was safe because we trust each other. But at times it wasn't uncomfortable because we were definitely aware we were going to be sharing this with you. So hold us like you love us over there. And here's my conversation with Jen. Let me just say, with great enthusiasm and a bunch of emotion, how much I have been looking forward to this, really, ever since, you know, we talk about braiding things. I feel like our lives have been braided before we really connected, even. Like, I knew of you, and I would hear, I've shared numbers of stories of people like, oh my God, there's this amazing woman who did this thing. And you've heard people talk about me, and like, oh my God, she's on my list. And so when we finally did intersect, it was like I found a sister. Mm. What I'm excited and why I invited you and what I love about you and what makes, I want to hear more about with you, like why I lean into what you see through your eyes and what you think with your beautiful brain and what you make with your beautiful hands. Is that, you know, just witch to witch, there's that, right? Because I'm like, you know, you can see like witch, you know, like we would notice each other in a crowd, and we have for years. But the fact that I for years, I don't know if you know this about me, I was a photography major in college. I was an art major, and photography was my thing. So I look at you as a photographer among many things in your life. You know, that's how you primarily finance your life, fair to say. And I'm gonna put a link to your amazing stuff. Jen did all the photos for my website, and your photos that you took of me on my website, this last thing, I did not know. It was like I saw myself for the first time, and I fell in love with myself through your lens. And I know you hear that a lot, and I know it never gets old, so I'm saying it again. Yeah. Is that was important to me. And so that was our professional connection there that I got to experience truly what you do. But the draw to you has always been this creative. You also are an entrepreneur, and I know you know there are things that only another entrepreneur can understand of how many things go on, how lonely it is in your head, in your business, in your practice, how crazy you feel 9 times out of 10, how on fire you feel. And so when I look at you, I see what I feel inside, and it's attractive. you know, as opposed to like straighten up, Lyle, like figure it out. You know what I mean? I'm like, no, no, that. Like, if that's wrong, if that's right, I don't want to be wrong, or whatever the phrase is. You know, what is the phrase?
If that's fucking cares.
Yeah, whatever. So make it playful and alive so that I can move more deeply into that side of my own creative spirit. And then your writing. Every time I read your writer, and I know you're like, if I read a book, and I'm like, can I just put when in there? Because every time I read your written word, I sob. It's just so, I'm so hungry for whatever you write. It's like I'm already anticipating we talked about Women Who Run With the Wolves, like that, there are these books you'll never pry out of my hands, and I'm firmly convinced yours will be one of them. No pressure, right? Let me just put it out there. But seriously, so the combination of like this creative spirit and the sense that you're plugged into a fire. Oh, and that's the other thing that I love and identify about you is, you know, the rage that visits you and the fire and the passion. I'm like, me too, you know, and that you are just done denying that side of yourself, big sigh. And then the shame that comes with it and the lifetime of authorizing that to flow through you.
Fuck yeah.
And how it shapes and informs who you are as an artist and a creative person in the world and the service that you hold. So all of that swirled together. And when I conceived of this series, I am interviewing, I think, 13 women, and you were right there. I'm like, must hear what's on her mind. So let's just begin with that. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Yeah. I just need to pause and take a deep breath because I think, no, I know. Mm. I know the biggest gift that you can give another human is seeing them.
Yeah.
It's going to make me teary. So thank you for seeing me. Yeah. The way that you see me saying it out loud, right? Because that is slightly intimidating.
Yeah.
When you have someone who really sees you and they reflect that back, it's vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I do.
This is a whole podcast about the way that we see each other, and that is what I do for women in the world. And I would desperately want them to be seen. And there are so many different ways to do that.
Have I told you about the Lyle list that I have in my phone?
No.
This is if someone were to ask me what's the best tool you have used for yourself in business as a leader, as a woman, as a creative, I would say my Lyle list, my Lyle love list. And it's a note in my phone. And I just noticed, you know, those dark nights of the soul. Of course you know those dark nights. So I am seen sometimes in ways that, and I put my hand on my chest and it moves me to tears. Mm-hmm. And it's over email, text, a stranger on a street, as someone who, you know, certainly loads of my clients, readers of my books, readers of my emails, subscribers. And it touches me. If it has that effect on me, I cut and paste and I pop it into this Lyle love list, which is now over 70 pages long in my phone. And this is the dark Scorpio in me, as I'm like, Todd, when I die, just like Cooper knows the code to my phone. Just go in there and just like read that shit, you know? That's good. I'll just, you're welcome, you know, because I'm going to make it super easy. And he's like, when you die? I'm like, you know, yeah, I'm very like pragmatic, you know? So it's my collection of it's like my shoebox, my virtual shoebox. And I print it ever so often. And it's just rub it in, you know? Yeah. I had a grad school professor that was like, noticed when people didn't take a compliment, a lot of times women.
Yes.
And he would stop and say, hold on, Lyle, we're going to do that again because I saw Lyle didn't take that in. So everybody stop for a second and you say that again. And Lyle, this time put your hand on your chest and rub it in.
Oh,
which is
God.
Like bold move for a white male.
I was
to
just
going to
say, as a white,
what's going on in my body. Yes. So we'll just put that aside for a second.
Oh my God.
But I have my family do that, rub it in. Because it's fleeting and it's so deeply nourishing. So like get that into your bones. So I'm glad you had that effect. I had that effect on you.
You did.
Yeah.
You did. Thank you.
Because you did it on me through your lens, you know?
Yeah.
So it is nourishing. All right, lady. So what's on your mind?
Lyle.
The face.
The bigger question is, what isn't?
What is not on my mind? And so you have a full mind right now. And so when I asked you, what are three things, give me the three things to braid, you were like, fuck you, Lil. I'm taking like 50.
Yeah, pretty much. That
was... Do you know how many people are, how good that's going to hear be to hear? Because I'm like, fuck you when you're three.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you 15.
I was like, well.
You got a big braid.
Well, I was like, okay, I can write this thing. And then I, you know, and then I'm like, yeah. And then it means this. And then it means this. And this is how it ties
so
into
that,
this.
So those are the people I asked to this conversation. People that have divergent brains, mm-hmm. that have multiple browsers open on their brains.
And literally on their computers.
Yeah.
Like my list of research
hugely.
And reading and like.
Yeah. It makes my 20-year-old so stressful. Yeah, when same. He sees all the little like.
My daughter's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm researching my life.
Right.
Okay.
And I don't want to lose it. Right.
Yeah. So I've got to learn and I can't. Yeah, I'm old, so I can't remember.
So give me
where
some of the tabs in your brain.
Okay. So the tabs in my brain that we're going to bookmark and chat about. I'm currently writing about the both and, which I've written about and talked about for many years.
Your body. You were born this way, like
yes.
Lady Gaga, right?
Yes. Like, yeah. Like, and how as we move into the crone phase of our life, there is the ability to hold space for all the both and mm-hmm. it refers back to what you said earlier around permission.
Yeah.
Like, when you saw me and you're like, oh God, I see a witch. This girl's on fire and she's doing all these things and like... When we recognize that in another person, it gives us permission to live
into
that.
Right, if that's wrong, I don't want
to
be right.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, how do we do that in this world? And, you know, it ties into every way that we live our lives.
Yeah.
It ties into the political situation in the world now. It ties into environmentalism. It ties into being in our bodies. It ties into being a parent. I think the wisdom is... The wisdom that I'm learning is that I literally am living in one foot in and one foot in over here and over here in the different
concentric. And what is the here and here?
Well, I mean.
Name it. go there.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
The physical and the ethereal, spiritual other.
As a witch does.
As a witch does. But it had to come slowly.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right.
Why? So I make some stories about that because, of course, I relate to that. But for someone who doesn't know you or doesn't know me, for that matter, what does that? Why did it have to come slowly?
Well, I know now that I wasn't ready for the ability to say that out loud, even.
Yeah.
Like I live in two spaces, and one of them mm-hmm. is sort of not on this planet, and it's not of human physical quality. Just makes you sound batshit. If conventionally speaking, mm-hmm. so if you had mm-hmm. said that to me even 10 or 15 years ago, I probably would have laughed and been like, look, I got to go make dinner.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's this place in you that wants to avoid, like, can mm-hmm. we just numb out? Can we just not think about any of that because it's overwhelming, because it's too much? And I think we have to for a certain number of years. And then, and also, we get the knock on the door repeatedly.
Yeah.
Like, hi, we're at the windows, we're banging. So the signs are coming in, and then you finally hit a point where you're ready, or something happens, or someone dies, or you go through cancer, or, like, whatever that catalyst is.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, that's the divergence. That's where the mm-hmm. road splits, and you have a choice of which way to go. And so... A bunch of shit hit the fan last year, and I was literally physically standing in my yard barefoot on a regular basis, like unable to tether myself back down to earth. And I thought, well, am I leaving?
Yeah.
Like, am I literally physically? I was terrified because there was a part of me that was like, no, this is okay. This is the culmination of years of researching magic and spirituality mm-hmm. and witch wisdom.
You are safe.
And you're totally safe and fine. Mm. And there was a part of me that was still like, I don't know what this is. I can't name it. I can't describe it. I don't know how to talk about it.
So therefore it's not true and you can't trust it and it's not real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally know.
And am I literally supposed to be leaving? Like, is this the world? Is this the spirit realm preparing me to die? Like, what the hell is happening? Because your brain...
Do you hear the brain?
Yeah,
that's
your
brain talk,
your
right?
logic brain is like,
hello? What the fuck? Come the fuck down, Captain Major Tom,
yes!
you know?
Yes. I mean, you got to love David Bowie who tapped into
And then you lose time when you go in that space too. So do you get the spacey thing? Like I came back from Omega this weekend. I went away for a retreat and I came back and I'm like, Todd's like, why are the keys in the freezer? And like, why are the, you know, and I'm like, wait, what? You know, like when you come back that I feel like that's a skill. That's a muscle.
Oh, you have to learn
toggling
how to use it.
Because, back and forth.
Well, and then I'm like, oh, I have ADHD.
Yeah. Well, then we pathological. Yeah, so, you've like, got to have people a name. Who are listening to this, who there are people who are going to be listening to this going, I totally know what they're talking about. And then there are other people, us 20 years ago, 15 years ago, who are like, what the fuck are these women talking about? So I want to give an example. Let's each give an example, like concretely, of what we mean by toggling back and forth and what it's like, you know? So.
Right.
So I'll give you an example of like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was having a moment. I was going to my therapist, I think, and I was thinking about what am I going to talk about? What's my topic? What am I going to bring or whatever? And I got to this word lonely. I feel really, really lonely. I'm a woman among men at home. I am an entrepreneur. What's wrong with me that I'm surrounded by people and I feel lonely? Like, what is it, Lale? And I just wanted to crack that open. And so I parked my car. I was going to see my parents right here in independent living where they live. And I was going near their apartment and I got out of my car, started walking down the street. I look up and there's a man, an older white man standing in the middle of the sidewalk. I don't even think he was there before. It was like he manifested just for me. And he was holding, his arm was outstretched, and he was holding an iris, a single iris. And I looked up, and he said, this is for you. And I literally, Jen, I almost went, God? Like, I mean, in my mind, I'm not Christian. I don't even really use the word God. I use divine, but he was a dude, you know? So I'm like, that's what we call the dude, is God. So it's not, you know, the goddess or the divine or whatever. So I was like, that moment of like, were you even there? Did you come for me? That was the beginning of one of the most magical days I have ever had, where I went to my therapist and realized my soul was hungry for something it hadn't even registered to the front of my brain, which is I wanted to take myself away to Europe. I wanted to be the woman that goes to Europe by herself, even though she has people she could go with. Ironically, this loneliness was for my soul, not for other people. I was lonely for my soul, and it was across an ocean, and I didn't know that I wanted that. And the minute I just named it, I couldn't not want it. And then all this sort of stuff happened, and within 24 hours, I had told Todd, I like flights were freakishly cheap. A client had gone to Portugal, this is where I'm going, in September. Everything just got crackled into place. And I started to research, okay, so I'm going to Portugal. Everything clicked into place. 24 hours later, I'm researching what should I do? I've never been to Portugal, ever. I don't even speak Portuguese. I don't know. What the fuck am I doing, you know? Yeah. And I all these millennials that go, like, digital nomads, here's the top 10 things to see. And they have the little selfie sticks, thank God, you know, because I'm, like, on YouTube, like, what the fuck is there? So I'm going to Lisbon for 4 nights and then Porto, the city I'd never heard of. But a friend is like, if you're going to Portugal, Lale, make sure you divide your time between Lisbon and this town, Porto. And I was like, what the fuck? But I Googled it, and I'm like, oh, my God, Porto. So I'm going. So I'm watching this list. Number 10 is this – so – 2005, when I started my business, I was choosing names for my business, and I landed on She Changes. And I Googled, you know, what She Changes. At the same time, so no one had taken the domain, I decided. At the same time, this other woman, Janet Ellman, had created the sculpture. And I contacted her, and it was called She Changes. And I was like, hey, my business and your sculpture were born at the same time. I can think of no one I would rather. It's this huge steel structure that, like, moved with the wind outside, and it was, like, fabric-y and whatever. That was 2005. And it was lovely. She emailed me back, and we had this lovely exchange. Well, now, 2023, I'm going to Porto, a city I'd never heard of, a country I didn't know I was going to. Like, and I'm looking at this top 10. Well, number 10 is, you know, if you can, go down to the beach. Because there's this amazing sculpture that's called this. And he said it in Portuguese, but in English, it's She Changes. And I was like, what?
Christ, like God,
you know, like I could not have told you where in the world oh that sculpture God. Was. And so like, that's when you're like, am I literally connected to this planet right now? Because I feel so ethereal and so like I look through my magic lenses that I worry for my sanity. I worry for my functioning, but I wouldn't trade it for the world, you know? So I have a good team of body workers that bring me down to earth.
Yes.
But yeah. Yes. So like, what's your illustration of what you're talking about when you say you have a foot in both realms?
I think it's exactly what you just described. I don't know that I have a story that's top of mind. I have a bunch of little stories. The one that's fairly recent was last year. I was sitting at the dining room table with a friend of mine who was like, hey, there's this photographer I follow. And I followed her too a little bit. And she was like, she's doing a thing in Texas. And I don't sign up for these anymore. I kind of don't. I just...
You're not there.
I don't know. I don't need them, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was a bunch of different things. It was some photography. It was mostly like... But there was like pottery and pie making and like vintage thrift shopping, which is what I love for.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but it was weird. I looked at it for maybe 3 minutes, looked at the thing and was like, I'm going. You can come if you want. I have no idea. Like, I was like, it's in Texas. I know nothing about Texas. I'm not drawn to Texas.
Right.
And I was like, the whole time I was like, why am I going? Went, it was a really cool experience, met other women, loved it, but was still like, and the woman that I speak to every day, twice a day now, I met at that retreat. And we are literally just like soul sisters, knew each other from another life.
Yeah.
And we joke all the time. Because she was like, same thing.
She
had just moved.
Why am I here?
She's like, why am I going to Texas?
I just have that feeling like I have no business doing this.
Yeah, she's like, this doesn't make any sense. Nothing. And so now we talk about it all the time. So I think what it is a repeated muscle memory. Like when you form a habit, it takes X number of days.
Yeah.
So this is about continually following your intuition. I can't tell you how many stories I have where later that's what happens, where I go, oh, I had a hit about that and maybe I ignored it and now it's coming true, or, you know, I dreamt about that or this happened. So that's what I was talking about. Like, over the years, there have been knocks at the door in the window that are so blatantly obvious looking back. Now, you know,
That's the key, right?
So, like, you go, okay, well, I guess I'm going to Europe, and
but you wouldn't be able to look back if you hadn't gone through the door.
Exactly.
If you hadn't opened the door.
You have to open the window. You have to go through
door. Or not. A lot of people don't. But it's what you're doing is you're hearing the knock. You're acknowledging a knock is happening.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think what ties into this too, and this is the thing that I was writing about with the both and, right? So if we pursue one part of our multidimensional, multifaceted selves, and we ignore all the rest, who do we become? A lot of times, what we're trying to do is choose the path that's the most palatable, because society has given us, here's what you need to be. You need to be hustle culture. You need to be the worn out mom. You need to hurry everywhere you go. You need to make a lot of money. You need to have the house. You need to
grow.
You know, you need to always grow, always expanding.
Gratitude. Don't forget to be grateful.
Right. Right. Oh my God. The list
Treasure
is never
this
ending.
Moment.
You need to look like this. You need to work out. You need to buy this beauty cream. Okay. So if we decide we are this, and sometimes we decide that without realizing we're deciding it, because we've just swallowed. Every morning we get up,
amen,
we swallow it.
Yep. Yeah.
And we're like, moving on. And at some point, that's why people have a midlife crisis, right? Because they wake up, all of a sudden they have their house and their two kids and all their stuff. And they're like, what am I doing? Why am I doing? Do I like this?
That was me at 36.
Right. So with the, you know, what I'm writing about is, because part of the work I do with women is try to help them see themselves. Like, all my whole world is about, how do you see yourself? Mm-hmm. And what is that? What does that then draw you into? So how do I get you to see, you know, through the work I do, leaning into like sensuality, your body, sexuality, you know, when you said to me, the trifecta of creativity, sensuality, spirituality, and sexuality, I was like, whoa, that's what I've been doing. Oh my God. Yes. I've been living that, but I didn't, nobody said it out loud. Okay.
Balance.
Thank you.
Right,
yes. Right.
Right.
So if we believe in spirit to even a small degree, how do we then lean in to these other sides of ourselves? How do we allow ourselves to get to know them? How do we say yes to intuition? How do we then, because then what that does, when we research that and lean into it, it raises the vibration of how we actually want to feel. And then we manifest the things.
That's power.
Well, yeah.
I mean, at the end, it's yes. like.
Yes.
I mean, all of that is code for power. You know, yes. manifesting is like, true. You know, it's like a cauldron of power.
Yes.
You know, I've heard magic. Lisa Lister describes magic as desire made real. Mm-hmm. And I love that definition. Mm-hmm. I was listening to Cassandra Speaks. Have you read this book?
No.
Fuck.
Okay. I'll write that one down.
So I was at Omega this past weekend, and I have the book Cassandra Speaks, and I know enough to be dangerous about it. I've read it in bits and pieces. But I had the Audible, and I listened to it as I was driving through the Green Mountains, and, you know, with the top was off the Jeep, and it was just so surreal. And she talks about all these stories as women. If women were the story changers, the world would change. And at the crux of the book is this invitation, her query around if women led the world, if women were the storytellers, would we do power differently? Is there some innate way we do power differently, or are we just telling ourselves that? So she went on, she's the co-founder of Omega, and she went on to do Women in Power conferences. And her definition of power is desire made real. And, you know, energy, like, made real is, like, that intersection between what I see and desire and service with you know, manifesting and making it real, actuality. And so it's power.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Different power. Both and power. You know, that whole thing.
Mm. It absolutely is. And that kind of circles back to, like, but I think that you and I and everyone else needs the continual example of women around us living into that place of desire and place of power and place of, you know.
What have been some of your examples? Like, what have you...
For inspiration?
Yeah. Like, examples.
Oh, God. I think a lot of it comes through...
You have to look hard for them, huh?
Yeah, I was like,
they're not... It's just not this huge...
No, I think there are a lot of it is in women who have written books, and I can read their words. And living adjacently to other witches who I know personally.
Have you always defined yourself as a witch?
God, no.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Me neither.
No.
Me neither. I'm laughing. My Jersey behavioral scientist consultant part of my brain is like, did you really just say that? Like,
oh my God.
And I'm like, I would have mocked that I don't know, 6 years ago.
Sure.
And it reminds me of Brené Brown says, with Elizabeth Gilbert, when she was talking about creativity, she said, if you had asked me about creativity even like 5 years ago, she said, I would say I don't have time for ART because I have a J-O-B.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, I love that quote. Yes. Yeah. And it's so fucking condescending.
Yeah.
That's so
what we do. We participate in the patriarchy. You know?
I know. I mean, I grew up a Jehovah's Witness, for God's sake.
Right, I mean,
I drank down a culty syrup of God my whole life, and that I was, you know, the thing that comes back to me in my mind that I fight is when I was five, I was always too much. I was the kid who talked too much, asked too many questions. I was just a lot in air quotes, and. Then when I was five, I asked my mom, well, then who made God? And she didn't know what to do with me. And so she took me to this elder in the congregation, and we had this sit down, and I was so excited that I was going to get my answer.
Right.
And so I sat down, and he leaned into my face physically, and he said, who do you think you are? And then he proceeded to chew me out and like, well, I don't know the answer and da-da-da in the Bible. And I just remember physically shrinking, and that voice has stayed in my head, right?
So, yeah.
So, yeah. All
from five? That happened when you were five?
That happened when I was five. Who do you think you are?
Yeah.
And I was always questioning things, and I didn't leave that until I was in my early 20s. Yeah. And so a lot of this... And if, again, if you had told me back then who I would be now, I would have cracked up and said you were crazy. So I think, you know, we all have our own path of, like, how do we get to the place we are now?
Sure.
But it was relentless because when I was little, there was weird shit happening all the, like, I was open. I was one of those weird, whatever they are, star children. I don't know what you call something where I read about it now and go, oh, that was me. Like, weird stuff was happening all the time. I was so in tune with stuff I still can't explain, and I don't think I actually need to.
Yeah.
I think.
That's different, isn't it? Yeah. That's liberating. Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
The need to, like, this doesn't need to, I believe you.
Yeah.
That moment where it's like, I believe you. I don't need to say words and get data to prove what I actually believe.
So over the last few years, I haven't been talking about this stuff. Mm-hmm. I've been slowly talking about it more as I come more into my own power around, it doesn't matter if you accept me or not. It's okay for me to be
this
person.
When you say this stuff... The ethereal.
The ethereal,
witch,
the witchy, like, the all of that. I don't need anyone else to accept it. I don't need you to approve of it. Mm-hmm. But I was more quiet about it, you know, as I leaned
forming your
this.
Own relationship with it.
Exactly. And so while I was confident in it, I still wasn't talking about it.
Right,
because also it felt like it was sacred.
Yeah.
And I didn't need somebody else to argue with me about it. I just want to be.
There's
and
the
that
both
is freeing.
And
yes.
To the degree we keep that private and we don't talk about it, or we talk about it in hushed tones.
Yes.
And like, I'll know. I walked into a shop on an island, Vinyl Haven, and it was a jeweler shop. Never saw this woman before in my life. And we looked at each other, and I was like, our eyes were like, witch.
You know, like,
I was like, I get it. I see you. You know,
well,
there's
see
thing.
I think that there is a point in your life where you literally can see into someone's soul. And I know I'm at that place now where there's just a knowing.
Yeah.
I know when I meet someone if I'm going to be able to have a real conversation.
And my experience is people will either close their eyes and run in the opposite direction.
Yes.
Or they will tear up and feel seen.
And they will meet you.
Nothing
in
between, really.
No. Nope, that's a fact. And one of the things
that
you...
So that's a thread of yours. Seeing yourself, seeing others. I mean, that is your... I mean, you're a photographer primarily, you know? So that's not surprising that is your mode.
Yeah, I'm very visual.
That is your value.
You're quoting all these things, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I read that. But, like, I can't pull it up in the same way.
Right.
One of the things you... So one of the things you said, and then I was tying into it around when you're young... When you're little, ties into one of the things I really wanted to talk about, which is, well, it's multidimensional. So I want to talk a little bit about what my daughter has taught me.
Mm.
And there's a couple of pieces there. One, I'm obsessed with the book Raising Free People by Akilah Richardson. Which,
I'm going to check that out. I'll link to it in the notes. Yeah,
it is.
I'm not familiar with
I
that
I feel
one.
Like every parent should have to read it. She's speaking from the perspective of being a black woman, she's married in America, raising these two kids. And it's a lot about unschooling.
Oh, my God. Oh, I love that concept.
But it's like,
I've never really heard it put that way.
Like, it's about capitalism. It's also largely about trusting our children.
You know, you're talking about that book, how I talk about Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. And I want to, you know, Paul Revere riding around the town with it. I want to ride around like, read this book, you guys. Read this book.
Put down, you know, what, like, you're doing right now.
Yeah. Don't you feel like that level
I'm
of...
I'm so passionate.
Like, you guys.
Guys,
you know,
you're not,
like,
listening. And
read
I think this.
Read this. It's so fucking good. It changes everything.
It changes
everything.
Yeah. And so I actually...
You can't unsee it when you see it. And there's your seeing thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Raising Free People. Got
Raising
it.
Free People.
And the wisdom of children you put in there. Yeah.
It's about, like, we are, okay, simply put, we are a capitalist nation.
Yeah.
That everyone needs to get in line and go to school and go to college and get their job.
Don't question.
And don't question anything. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is we are the power figures in our children's lives and we tell them what to do. And that is our role, and that is what we as adults have been taught by this capitalist culture is you need to control your child. You need to teach them what to do. And this whole book just like takes a pair of scissors to that whole piece
God.
Of paper, shreds it entirely and leaves you and goes, okay, what are you going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
So this is stuff where I'm like, I have this connected relationship to my daughter, and I feel like she teaches me all the time. And I can't wait for these next generations. But I also feel like our work as adults right now is to listen to them because they are wise. And yes, they don't have life experience. I mean, kids sometimes in the morning, I'm like, how are you going to function? How are you going to be able to walk out the door? Like, what are you doing? Right? Like, she's exhausting. And she is so wise. And there is...
They're so pure sometimes.
They're so wise. They're so pure. And they still have the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But, right? Like, so there's the whole, like, oh,
yeah. You know, the movie The Power talks about that with the girls and the moms with electricity. Mm-hmm. The moms, like, you know, and the girls are like, you know, they're unpracticed with their own electricity. Yeah.
And of course we look to those younger generations in that way, but also they know what they need and they're asking for it and we're not listening because we think we know better.
What are they asking for that they need?
They need quiet. They need physical touch. They need, it's funny, I went to the school, I was talking to the school social worker at Portland High, and she was like, all these freshmen, the level of anxiety with these freshmen mm-hmm. is something we've never seen before.
Yeah, yeah.
It's this universal, like, I think they're all crying for connection, and they're mirroring what we don't have. I mean,
what are we talking about? Loneliness. Wow.
And I think that also one of the other things that was on, I was like, we are living through the collapse of our society mm-hmm. and we will be able to look back and be like, oh yeah, that was we were in the apocalypse. Right? Okay, cool.
How many people, let me just pause because as we're recording this, the fires are raging in Canada and mm-hmm. the smoke is coming. Did you have people send you pictures of the smoke down in Manhattan and the, mm-hmm. all the smoke? And how many people did you hear use the word apocalypse?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And pandemic. The orange pandemic and the apocalypse.
Oh, I hadn't heard that one.
Orange pandemic is what they're calling
it,
too.
This is all the dystopian novels that we've seen. This is what it looks like.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I think this is what a cracking open looks like in our culture here in the U.S. and across the world. Like, mm-hmm. we are all cracking open.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I want to yell about, which is... The book by Akilah Richardson, but there's two more things I want to know about.
I'm not going to stop you, lady. Go.
One is this album called Portals by Melanie Martinez. She's a pop singer. I think pop is largely ignored as it should, you know, as, you know, oh, that's the music for your generation. So the whole album, the girl is in her mid-20s. She's brilliant. She's literally like, okay. I don't understand the way her brains work. But the whole album is about life after death.
Wow.
And she literally has a room in her house called The Portal, and she wrote this, and it is, if you, it's that song I sent you.
I was going to say, you sent me a
song. I sent you a song that I
immediately listened to it and started sobbing.
Yes.
I was like, what's happening to me?
Yes. Yeah. That girl is like 26, maybe. Yeah. This is a baby, and she is writing my soul.
Yes.
Like, the milk of the...
I love how that just flips it and breaks it and snaps it. Yeah,
exactly. And this is where I'm at. This is the sort of both and. Like, yes, I am moving into the crone phase of wisdom.
Right.
And also, I don't know shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still in a place of being... And what's wonderful is you hit the place of, like, I know I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll never know a lot. You know, there's so much I don't know. So there's a humility which creates that openness, that receptivity.
And
you know, one of your threads, so if we're to recap, so one of your threads that I'm hearing so clearly is that seeing yourself, seeing mm-hmm. each other, the need to, that it starts there. It's just core.
Mm-hmm.
And then the freedom. You were talking about, the book is Raising Free People.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you are seen is you are freed from convention, from the narratives, from the cult-like thinking, from the indoctrination that we do, from the unschooling.
Yes.
Is all about freedom.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you mind if I play with your threads?
Please do.
Please. Feels very saucy and spicy saying that, right?
Yes, man.
Yeah. I love that. And in the intersection, we're not calling it out specifically, but I want to touch on it, is the intersection between our brains and our thinkings and our thoughts, which we can dismiss and be like, our brains, but they're important. I mean, that's how we shape society, with our words and our thoughts and our beliefs. So our brains are important, but man, are they big, right? And they're not everything. So you've got our brains and our thoughts and what's on her mind. That's the whole promise of this thing. And then you've got and there's such a thing around mental health. And am I crazy or who do you think you are? Are you losing it? Am I delusional? That's my word, delusional.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the bodies of, I just know. You've talked a lot about intuition and you have, having lived as you have, you get data. that validates this will have been worth it. This instinct that I'm having, I know enough to recognize the sensation of my body to make it worth it, to trust it so I can find out this is the knock on the door. And then there's like this, I don't know, I'm going to call it collective, like spirit, communal wisdom that is bigger than you. You know, that feels like, and so we can call it mind, body, spirit, but that just feels trite.
Right.
It's like I've heard a lot of women through this series as I've been talking in conversation with people talk about, we talk about roots. And often a woman will do this. She'll do her hands up and down, pointing to the center of her body. Like
the vagus nerve.
Like, oh my God, the vagus nerve.
Literally is the central nervous. It is the root.
That vagus nerve. Where did I read about the vagus nerve where it's like, let me tell you about the vagus nerve.
Yeah, it's amazing.
We don't talk about that shit.
No, because, and this
what
is...
Let's be clear what that is. What do you know about the vagus
nerve? I mean, very little.
Yeah, but it's everything.
It's the central nervous system. It sort of is where everything comes from, and it's the core nerve in your body. That
it's when you're pregnant. It's why you can't be on your back with a pregnant baby. My kids hate it when I watch a movie and a pregnant woman's on her back. I was like, she'd never be on her back because it cuts off the vagus nerve.
Yeah, you can't. There's no circulation.
Right? I was like, she's got me.
Bad things happen.
Right.
There's health.
So women intuitively know that vagus nerve when we're carrying life.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are reminded.
Well, and I think this ties into us talking again. Somewhere in the beginning, we're like myths and stories and women that run with the wolves. And
You mentioned you're reading Clarissa Pinkola Estes' Women Who Run with the Wolves.
And I think that we are hungry for a way to process and figure out. And when we can, living out here on, I astral travel in my dreams, which means I'm traveling to other spaces and times. And I didn't even know what that was a few years ago.
What is it for someone who doesn't know? I don't know that I know.
I mean, basically, you're literally traveling to another dimension.
Yeah.
That is unrecognizable and another time, and time works differently.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to explain it. I know when it happens, I'll remember bits and pieces of it, and I can write about it in a dream journal.
How is it different than a dream? It's like a wrinkle in time, sort of.
Yes, it's a knowing when you wake up that something completely different than a normal dream happened. Mm. Yeah, I was like,
knowing.
You just know, and your body just knows, and it's only, it's happened. The astral travel has happened a fair amount of times now that I just know when I wake up, I'm like, oh, that thing happened where I wasn't on this plane.
Yeah.
I wasn't on
Shamans
a planet.
Shamans do it all the time.
Right.
Yeah. So many people do it all the time.
But when you do it.
Yeah. It's like, let's do a check, shall we?
It's a little creepy because I don't know what happened last night. I'm just going to have coffee and sit quietly over here for
a
minute.
Can you imagine if we talk about this more at dinner parties? I mean, I do. I don't get invited to a lot of dinner parties.
I don't
parties,
go out anymore.
Which means I would like to have a dinner party with you. Right? You know, we would find each other at the dinner party. But these are the things I want to talk about.
Same.
Because it makes safety. It gives words for what feels, which is universal.
Yes.
I mean, The Wrinkle of Time, the movie The Wrinkle in Time, or the book, you know, is the premise is you don't have anything, you don't need to be or do anything special. You just have to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is the absolute opposite of the culture that we live in, which tells us in order to be anything, you have to be something.
Wow. My brain just broke. I feel like a banana peel. My brain went, wee. In order to be anything. What is, say that again?
In order to be anything, like anybody. In order to, like, really, if you want to be somebody, you have to do something. So, this idea of, and it applies universally to any, just pick anything in order to, I have somebody that I know who's an amazing artist, and his art never made him money.
Right.
And so he feels like a failure because he has just a 9-to-5 job. And it breaks my heart. Because it's irrelevant to me where you make your money or how you pay your bills. And I still see you as an artist.
Yeah.
But culturally speaking,
how we define.
He feels like a failure because by definition, his father looked at him this way.
You know what you're pointing to now, which is fascinating for me and heartbreaking for me, is we take so many things that I treasure, and I have been guilty of this, and we make them identities that you can have or not have. Mm-hmm. Most of mine are not have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't a writer until my second book. I had written a blog for 10 years. I wrote one book, which was very well received. And then I wrote a second book, which is also well received. And it was only when I finished my second book and I came home to Todd, my beloved, in all seriousness, and I said, oh my God, I think I'm a writer. And he looked at, yeah, well, you can laugh at it now.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. He did too. He was like, because his response to me was like, you think?
Yeah.
Like, what will it take?
Yeah.
This, now you've got conventional proof that you wrote and published and people have read and received and liked it. That's the conventional, and I've received money for it. I mean, so that's the conventional definition of writer. Not, but it wasn't a New York Times bestseller. It wasn't traditionally published. It was self-published.
Yes.
So that's why I was like, oh my God, I think I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah.
But the thing, like art, being an artist, creativity, being smart and intuitive, that there's all these conventional definitions. And Elizabeth Gilbert in her TED Talk talks about this. Of the original form of genius was in Greeks, was an energy that visited you. It knocked at your door, just like you said. And if you're brave enough, alert enough, and have capacity to turn around and say, who is it? You know, I'm doing the dishes. And open the door. Genius will come in and visit you. And, you know, you will welcome it into your house. You will have a conversation. You will work in concert with it. And it will leave you. But she said at some point we made the fall down of our society, not just in the U.S., but in our world, is at some point we decided that you were born a genius and genius became an identity. And I look at that with smart as someone who's not classically, I mean, I did school, I did graduate school, I rang the bells and I think, but I struggled. If you want to, first person that called me smart, I burst into tears because I was like, that is not me, but thank you for seeing me, right? And I had to work through that. And so intelligence, creativity, artistry, the example that you use with your friend who's, I'm not an artist. And you're like, oh, but you are. Because you're visiting, things are visiting you.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking, isn't it? And it's constipating. Because that's the art, that's the humility and service of letting something bigger than you flow through you.
Absolutely. And it's like the artist way, the Julia Cameron book, who, you know, millions and millions of copies. And I picked it up again and I was like, and we're starting over.
Right.
Because I'm trying to write. And I don't see myself as a writer. I have a huge fraud syndrome. I have a friend who writes. And every time I read her writing, I get sad and say, I'm not a writer. So, and she's like, are you kidding me? The trees don't stand together and go, well, I guess I'm not going to grow a branch because you're just really pretty. Like,
what? Like, I don't have acorns.
Right? Like, I mean, exactly. So, I think this is this universal thing that we all struggle with. And how do we day to day fight against that? I mean, it's exhausting.
You know what? I have a take on that because I just listened to it in Cassandra Speaks. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Lesser was talking about doing power differently. And one of the things she talked about are the tools and the pieces of work that help us do power differently. And one of the chapters was on imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And she said, I hear about it all the time in my work. That is what keeps, I'm not that. I'm the, you know, I can never want what I want because I'm not that.
Yeah.
And then when we do it, we call it luck freak. You know, I don't know how I found myself here. And we diminish it. And it's not fighting it or getting over it or not feeling it. It's bringing it with you. It's expecting it. Because as I frame it, I am sure it's not imposter syndrome because I'm not alone in there. I'm writing my third book. It's not, I don't want anybody to talk to me because I'm talking with something. That is, so I'm in concert with something.
Yes.
And so the imposter thing kind of is like true in that I am the workhorse and I am the flesh and bones mortal who's bringing it through me, but I'm housing something while I'm doing it.
Absolutely.
I like that frame on imposter syndrome. I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just bring it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I never really thought about it until I'm just talking about it with you. Like, yeah, I got something else in me. I'm housing. I have a tenant.
And what if that's what we talked about all the time? Like, along with the imposter syndrome.
You hear it called voice. Syndrome? Like there's something it's, pathologically wrong? Syndrome.
It's a syndrome. Wow. It is. It is pathologically.
It's an experience.
Fuck it up.
Right. I mean.
And what if
What if we stopped calling it a syndrome?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you and I have spent a lot of time talking about words that have power.
Yeah, words that have power.
And I think of, you know, the threads that we're pulling in your brain is you are a word nerd. You're a writer.
Really?
You're a writer, you're a writer, you're a writer, you're a writer. I'm just going to say that a lot, right?
I love it.
Yeah, I'm an artist, I'm an artist, I'm an artist, I'm an artist.
Yes.
And so words matter, and words are the tools, and words are the portals. Words are the power. That's where they intersect.
And words tell our stories.
Yes.
That's how we communicate with each other. Yep. When we're not visually communicating, we are. And the first, probably before visual communication and art or side by side, is our sitting here speaking to each other. We're seeing each other, and we are speaking to each other. Yeah. Those are our communication tools and the way that we use them in our own brain.
That's how we intersect with a mortal plane.
Absolutely. And they're the stories we tell ourselves and they're the stories we tell others and the power that they have to change us.
Okay. Women Who Ran with the Wolves, Clarissa Pinkola Estes. She wrote another book called Mother Night and another book, they're auditory. She stopped writing. I'm like, oh, they're all stories. They're all audible books now.
Okay.
So Mother Night was How to See in the Dark. And she talks about the liminal woman. And then there's another one, The Dangerous Old Crone, which is also an auditory book. And I freaking love those. So she talks about the liminal woman goes and travels like owls. They see in the dark. And they go through the veil into the other world. They get the medicine, and then they fly back to our rooftops. And when she wrote Mother Night, there were owls all over her roof when she was writing this. And that's that intersection between the words. The mortal plane is where we bring back the medicine.
Yes.
But the astral travel that you did to access it and go get it and bring it back, not a great concept? I was trying to think, where did I read about this?
Yeah, I mean, all of these concepts that are in these stories that, you know, when you read
you
them, when you read them, you go, ugh!
Right.
Like, you feel it. And so I'm reading, you'll remember which one it is, The low woman who sings into the bones. I can't remember which one she is, but it's at the beginning of the book, and she gathers the bones.
Oh, Loba.
You did it. But I can see her
the bone
in
woman.
Her cave.
She sings into
she
the bones.
She slowly gathers these bones and sings into them and breathes new life into them. Yeah. And I was like, oh.
And Lisa Lister and Clarissa and so many other women are like, I'm not going to tell you anything you don't know. I'm going to help you remember.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think that is what our work is. Now is
storytelling, words, remembering,
art, creativity, unearthing, living back into our bodies so that we can unearth our truths and then live them.
And there's all, like, you reference songs that portals music, art is the safe place we go of, I heard this song, you know, I read this book, I read this poem. I saw this thing.
It's where we get to feel.
Yeah, it's where we get to feel. Yes, Jen. Yes. Fuck. Boom. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I'm going to shift us a little bit because I'm conscious of time. Here's the place that I think about in this series is, like, you're in the middle of the night. You get up, or maybe it's in the morning or whatever. And what are the things that feel so patently obvious in your brain that we are not getting out here?
Not getting out as in not living, not saying.
No,
not,
it's just like, you're not getting it. It's like that side of your petulant kid who's like,
oh, what am I? Person?
No. You are seeing something.
Yep.
You are feeling something. Oh. And you're seeing this very clear thing, but you're not saying it because it feels so patently obvious. Everybody's talking about this. And the minute you say it and people are like, oh my God, I never thought about it that way. And it's like, what the fuck? How can you not see that?
Oh, that's so interesting. Okay, what is that? I think that is maybe just the way that we treat ourselves is how we treat others.
Oh my God, yeah. Yep. Boom.
Right, like, this is what I'm obsessed
with. I mean, think
of
the guy who sat you down at the age of 5 and got close in your face and said, who do you think you are? Imagine where he learned that.
Yeah.
So, what are you pocketing from this conversation? Like, what? Why are you laughing?
Well, because my pants are going to fall down on the way out. My pockets are so full.
Oh my God. That's great.
I think one thing is, well, there's a couple of things. Your ability to take a thread and pull back and weave it all together is just such a gift. Because I think that I try really hard and then I'm like, pew! Like
Right? That's the brain.
So I think...
My brain's like that.
And permission for other people. When we speak these, when we put this out to the world, when we write, when we create, when we have connections, when we go to dinner parties, this is how we... It's not even showing. It's sharing.
It's sharing.
When we live...
It's embodying.
...our own truth, we share that.
And yeah.
How important it is to have these conversations.
Can you imagine what our lives would have been like if we heard a conversation like this in our early 30s? I mean, I'm curious, like... Would it have imprinted on me? Would I have received it? I mean, I think I would have pocketed, you know, it for like a lozenge for later, like one of the lozenges that gets fuzzy in your pocket with like lint that you find.
Yes.
It's gone through the dryer a couple times, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's like someone said at another recording, they said, just keep throwing the rocks, like creating these ripples. You know, that's why I like the concept of someone overhearing this conversation. Like, you don't have to do anything with it.
Yes.
Just pocket it or not, but it's here, you know? So, God, Jen, thanks. Fun, fun, fun. Oh, it's like a play date, isn't it? It
totally is.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
You
Thank
are
you.
A gift. You are a rock star.
Likewise.
I just fucking love you. And I'll put information for how people to find you, because I would want to know you. I do know you. But I would seek you out. You
I
know what I mean?
Know you
so
too
I'm
going
to put a link to your
you.
Work and people thank can you. See your beautiful things. Okay.
Thank you, Jen.
Yeah. So that was Jen Dean and our conversation. Told you it would be a rollicking ride of a conversation. And it really, like all of these conversations that I'm having in this On Her Mind series, I'm referring to them as time release medicine. And I say that because, you know, I record them. And then because of logistics, there are a couple weeks lapse or sometimes even a month lapse before I can go back to them and listen to them again, because we don't know what we've said. I honestly go back and I was like, wow, okay, I have some idea, but it's like I get to discover the conversation all over again right before I release it to you. So I found that was the case. And I love Jen's reference that she said her pockets are so full, like her pants are going to fall down as she was leaving the conversation. And I get what she means, because we're both word nerds. And I know a lot of the people that gravitate to me are word nerds. So there are these turns of phrases and beautiful things that are said that I really love to pocket. And there are like these juicy questions. So the concept of unschooling as a way, as what's the application, as a means to combat convention or training or tradition, that unschooling is sort of the thing that gets at what I want to, like, the hump I want to get over. So I love that concept of unschooling. You know, a lot of these conversations, there's that common thread of the both and. But I loved the thread that we were weaving all over around doing power differently. There's another interview with Michelle where we talk about love, and we reference love as a tool. Love as the engine to drive leadership. And we talk about women driving their chariots of love into the center of town. And with Jen, we talked about, you know, doing power differently. And the questions that she references asking, I just love and I relate to. And I find refreshing whenever I hear someone else, like the instance when she said she was 5 and she got in trouble because she talked about, this phrase. She said, I drank down a culty syrup of God my whole life with how she was raised. And so when she was 5, she asked her mom who made God. And she got brought in to one of the elders of the community and got, you know, the who do you think you are? And at the age of 5. And then we talk about, can you imagine what might have been possible for our lives had we had access to this, some of the things we were talking about now? And we sort of ponder, we don't know, but we sort of ponder, would we have received it, or would we have dismissed it? Is that just something that comes with age, or is that something that comes with training, or both? And so, again, a lot of the questions we don't have immediate answers to, but I just friggin' love, and there's so many resources. I realize we threw out, as we were talking, Jen, like me, is a total resource hound. And so I assure you, all of the resources we reference, I had a list, and I will put them in the show notes if you want to go for a deeper dive. But her bottom line at the end of our conversation is, what's the one thing you're sort of pocketing? When she had these heavy pockets that were making her pants fall down, she said, the way we treat ourselves is the way we treat others. And I just freaking love that. So there's so many things for this conversation that I'm pocketing. I hope your pants are falling down over there. You know, get a good belt or not. Just go naked, for God's sakes. But thank you so much for coming along this rollicking ride with me. I'll be sure to include a whole bunch of stuff about Jen and her awesome business and the work that she does, so you can see the links for that as well in the show notes below. But thanks so much for being here with me. This is so much fucking fun.